My greatest professors in the university were unlimited. This is Dr. Herbert L. Byerly, Dean of the University of Healing, here in Campo, California, with the Absolute Philosopher. My greatest professors in the university were unlimited. I've attended many universities and had many wonderful professors, and my professors that were the greatest were unlimited. I referred to one professor who was teaching history at Marquette University, and he had this auditorium which was tremendous. It seated maybe 500, 800, maybe 1,000 students. It was quite large, you know, round and round and around. It kept rising up and rising up and rising up and rising up. And this professor taught this course, which was a history course and certainly not very exciting. But whenever he would appear, everyone would instantly become quiet and the room was packed. He always had a full house, whether they were all registered and accepted students or not, I don't know, but I imagine most of them were because his course was great. And he would get up there and he would say, okay, now put your books away, put your pencil and paper away. He said, we're going to take a journey. And he would take us on a historical journey, living in the experiences of the history that he was speaking about. And we sat there spellbound. We were delighted. And he started to talk. And an instant later, the bell went off, and we had to leave. An instant later, an hour had passed. Now, that's enthusiasm. That's a joy of teaching. And his students just were delighted. And, you know, you know. It was really quite amazing and quite beautiful because he lived each segment of history that he taught. And it made it a very exciting class. Well, I also tell the story about his final exam. And his final exam was quite special. On the day of the final exam, everyone was told to put their books aside, put everything aside, nothing out on the desktop, and they had a desk in front of them as they sat, and put it all away. And then he said, okay, now take a sheet of paper, put your name on the top, you know, and details that you have to have, and date and what have you. All right, now, everyone, do not talk to your neighbor. This is trusting you. This is the question. Who was the author of the book? Now, we spent a whole semester studying, reading that book, listening to his lectures, and just being thrilled to pieces with the course. We knew the history because we lived it with him. But we didn't know the teacher's name. I happened to know. I was fortunate. But many didn't know. And so then he says, all right, now pass in your paper. If you don't know it, pass in your paper. So everyone passed in their paper. It was blank, most of them. 90% of them were black, or even maybe better. And then he says, all right, now, for those of you who did not write down a name, and those of you who didn't write down the names of James Doyle, you know, the name of the author, he said, you will come to here tomorrow at the same time, and you'll take an examination of 100 questions.
Ah.
You know, and so be it. Now, they learned a lesson, you know, they learned a lesson that knowing who wrote the book was important, too. And, of course, it's not really that so much a matter as it is the idea that if you're doing a course, the course is required. Now, what textbook are you getting at? History of Tomorrow. No. Which one? History of Tomorrow comes out in several editions from several authors. Which one are you taking? Oh, James Doyle. Okay, then that's the book you want. But you see, if you don't know the name of your book, you can get perhaps several others that are similar to it, if not just like it. And you can be confused. Okay. My greatest professors in the university were unlimited. When I was at the University of Chicago in the Chicago Theological Seminary, I had a professor called Carl Rotherstown. Rotherstown. And he was a tall, skinny guy, a very not intense but excited person, you know what I mean? Very excited teacher. And he taught Old Testament to theology, or the Old Testament. It wasn't really a theology, it was just the Old Testament. And as he taught the Old Testament, he didn't have any notes. He just had the chapter title that he was working on. And he would get up there. This too was a large flat room where maybe about 200 students would fit in. And it was quite nice at the University of Chicago. And it was a very exciting class. I'll never forget that I took it. And then he would get up there and he would tell us the story of the Bible. Right next door was a building which was doing research on the volumes that they had found in Egypt. They found these in Israel. They found the ancient, what was the name of them? The
scrolls,
the ancient scrolls. But the these scrolls that they found, what happened was the shepherd boy was out herding his sheep, and the wind came up very strong, and he went in this cave, which he had never gone in before. And when he got in this cave, what he did was he just sat there, and he found a bunch of pieces of paper, and he burned the papers to keep warm. And then he looked around, and here was a bunch of big vases filled with these papers. And so he told his mom, and she said, well, bring them home, we need firewood. And so they brought them home, and they burned most of them, many of them. And then a passing traveler happened to talk to him, and he told him about the vases or the scrolls. And the guy said, my God, don't do it. Don't touch it. Don't touch it. I'll give you money. No, don't touch it. Because that's antiquity. That's ancient. And what it turned out to be were the scrolls that were written at the same time that the New Testament was written. And it corresponded with the same things that the New Testament had to say. Sit. Relax now. It corresponded with the same things that the New Testament had to say. And it was always known to be that, and known to be very wonderful in that respect. Now, I don't have all these terms at my fingertips right at the moment, but it was very excellent. And so then he would say to us, now, you think the things that I'm saying are, you know, sort of fanciful. And of course, the writers of the Old Testament were very fanciful. They used all sorts of imagination to tell their stories because they just had such wonderful stories to tell. And in telling their stories, they were telling all the world about what they believed God would say to them under those circumstances. And he gave me a phrase that I have learned to use all my life in my religious work, and that is, the Bible is the story of the religious development of a people. It's the story of the religious development of a people. How a people came from Moses, Abraham, and all of the others, on through the biblical kings, on through all of the times, and always with the one God, and always with the Hebraic God. And it was a very powerful and wonderful lesson to me. And when I heard Dr. Rothersdown explain all these things, I was just really very pleased. And then I had another non-professor, but I had my neighbor in the dormitory at the University of Chicago in the Theological Seminary. I had a neighbor there who was a Japanese Buddhist priest. And he was sent there by MacArthur to take courses there, because he ran a monastery in Japan, in Kyoto, Japan. I have, in fact, there's in the Shangri-La, I still have his book with all the pictures of his monastery and of his family and everything else. And we spoke together, and he came out of the Buddhist faith, but he also was into understanding the Christian philosophy. And so we had great talks in the evening. We would sit for hours in the evening talking about philosophy back and forth, and we would have cups of tea, and then, you know, as you sat and talked and talked and talked, soon you ran out of tea. And then he says, that's okay. When I was in the monastery, we would take our pickle and we would dip it in our water so that it would have a little taste to it, a little salty taste to it. So that we kept a pickle on hand so that we would have it to make the water taste nice in the, you know, the monastery. And these were just people that I've met, people that I experienced, and there are many, many more of them, each in their own field. I had a professor at the Marquette University who was not too pleased with some of my work. I was a journalism student, and I had no interest in going into journalism. It was the farthest thing from my mind. But I took the journalism course because it was good. Well, Dr. Hockauer was the professor, Father Hockauer, in my journalism class. And I believe is one of the Secretaries of State, John Foster Dulles. Secretary of State John Foster Dulles came to visit Milwaukee while we were there. And our professor said, you go and you talk to John Foster Dulles and you get a story good enough for the newspaper. You know, really an in-depth story. So each one of us, 30 students, went to interview the poor guy, you know, separately. Well, I got there maybe about the middle of all of them, you know. And so I said to Mr. Dulles, I said, you're a remarkable man. What sort of things have guided you in making your decisions to make decisions in life here? What sort of things have you had that have been your ways of handling things? Why have you done it? But he told me all about the professors that he had, the teachers that he had. He told me all about the type of experiences that he had, which built him a reputation for being an outstanding politician as well as Secretary of State for the entire United States, and going around the world being a diplomat and polishing up things. And we got to be quite chummy as he was telling me all this stuff. I was just in my early 20s at the time. But he was just very nice and just filled me in on everything and let me take pictures and everything. And so I came back to my professor, as we all did, and we turned in our report. And the next day when I came to class, the professor had a chance, Father Hockauer, to look over my report. And he said, you wrote the most stupid report in the world because you did not ask him about the problems in the Middle East. You didn't ask him about the problems here. You didn't ask him what the State Department is going to do about this, what the State Department is going to do about that. And, you know, your story is not going to be read by anybody. Nobody's going to care what you said. And I said, well, I thought you said write a story about him and not what his political philosophy was going to be relative to world conditions. And he said, well, anybody knows that. You're just stupid. And I said, I'm sorry. He said, I'll pass you on this course, but promise me you won't go into journalism. You know, and I had no interest in going into journalism. Well, this was one of my unlimited professors, and so I didn't go into journalism right away, but I went into other fields. And then I was down at the University of Chicago again, and I was taking courses at University of Chicago, and I had a part-time job at Griswold Bateman Warehouse as the person who did all the accounting for their taxes and their liquor accounts. You have to have your state tax, your county tax, your this tax, and all that sort of thing. And you had to know all those things and make sure they were all perfect. And math was never one of my favorites, but I just did precisely what I was told to do. And my work was okay. I worked there for almost a year. Well, when I left there, I decided I'd go into journalism because the Practical Builder magazine, my dad was a builder and I worked for him all about Practical Builder. So I went to work for the Practical Builder magazine as associate editor. And while I was there as associate editor, that is associate advertising manager, and while I was there as associate advertising manager, a job came open as associate editor in the magazine. And so I applied for it And my boss heard that I applied for it. He says, well, you don't want to be an associate advertising manager, so you really, this is not the place to be. If you don't get that job, you're fired, you know. And I said, well, now how about that? Well, there are many who applied for the job, and I didn't get it. So there it was. So I put out my feelers for a job in journalism around the area, and especially to my hometown where my wife lived. And I wrote to the editor, the publisher, and I said, you know, I'm in this here experience, and I'd like to have a job as the editor of your newspaper, you know. And the guy wrote back, come up and interview. I interviewed. He says, okay, thank you. So I went to work there. And I had 3 months before I could go because he had let the other guy go. And so in that 3 months, I went to the professor of the University of Northwestern University in Chicago, who was the head of the journalism department there. And that was Dean Sullivan. And I said, Dean Sullivan, I've got a job as editor of a newspaper. What four books do you recommend I read, you know, which cover it all? So he gave me four big thickies, you know. So I read all of them three or four times, and I just learned it all thoroughly. And then I went to work on the West Dallas Star, which was a weekly newspaper, and nothing applied. Nothing applied, because it was not a big gung-ho newspaper. It was a gentle newspaper. And so I learned to do it gently, writing obits and writing marriage announcements and what have you, you know, all the important stuff. And then my publisher put me onto heavier stuff. And finally, he says, Herb, my family and I are going to take a trip to Florida for a month. You're in charge. And you run the whole thing. You do whatever you want. And you know what we like to do here. So go for it. So while he was gone, I read the Christian Science Monitor, which I felt was a super type of paper. And I copied their style of makeup and layout. And put our stories in there and put our things in there. And I wrote features. And during the time he was away, the newspaper won several awards from the state and the national, from the county, you know, the county and national board of journalists, you know. And when he came back, he said, wow, you know, it's all right. But then when I went to the local journalistic group to receive my award and receive the honors, who was there but Father Hackauer, there to give me the award, and he knew me. I mean, he couldn't help but know me because, I mean, I had made an impression on him. He made an impression on me. And he says, you certainly have earned these awards. I have looked over as part of the committee to choose. I didn't know whose name we were choosing. It was just a paper. And exquisite. That's all he had to say. And other than that, he didn't say a thing to me about, you know. But you see, when we follow these professors that we have and let their wisdom guide us to the best of its ability, but that doesn't mean control us. If I say, you shall not go into journalism, what's going to happen, you know?
You go.
You're going, not because you don't even want to. You haven't even planned on it. I took journalism in University of Marquette University and so forth. I took radio workshop, and I took television workshop where we put on television shows and radio shows, and we did all these things. It's always a great preparation for the future field that I was going to work in. But you see, when the greatest professors of the university are unlimited, because they do their thing. Rathersdam, he spoke with an abandon, and people just listened to him and believed him because he believed in himself. But he was crazy. I mean, the things that he said, the standard brand fundamental religions would not really approve of. But he said it. And the same with our professor at Marquette University who taught history. He got up there and his unconventional way of teaching history, his classes all excelled. Every one of the students of his classes fell in love with history as, you know, another love. And I think that is really the way to go. Because my greatest professors in the university were unlimited. And just like we are unlimited, we are filled with love and light and joy and peace and harmony. And I tell you, I am the happiest guy in the world. I love you. I love you.
I love you.